Join me again in Deuteronomy chapter number 10. We're going to start in verse 6 in a moment, but first I need to talk a little bit about the text here. You may remember when we first started talking about Deuteronomy that I said it is Moses' final address to the Israeli people. It's delivered on the first day of the 11th month of the 40th year of the Exodus. That's all there in the information. For the most part, Moses speaks in the first person. So we know that he's talking to the people as he goes through here. But every once in a while, as I mentioned, we seem to have another person that puts information into the text. More than likely, it's some later prophet giving an explanation. That's what a lot of textual critics seem to believe. I happen to fall into that same sort of category. The verse that we're coming up to next is an example of that. Verse number 6. In fact, I'm looking at the English Standard Version text that we are using to go through this time. And it starts with a parenthesis, open parenthesis, because the English Standard Version translators believe this is extra material that was not in Moses' original address. So we kind of ended with Moses talking to the first person in verse 5. Just look at it. Then I turned and came down from the mountain, put the tablets in the ark that I'd made, and there they are, as he who is commanded me. It will be in verse 10 that we resume that first person perspective. I myself stayed on the mountain as at the first time, 40 days and 40 nights. All right. So why? Why is this material put in at this place? And the answer has to be, we don't know. It is in these verses, verses 6 through 9, it's material about travel. My suspicion is that it has something to do with pointing out that the Levites in the text that Moses is writing down were not given any type of territory in the Promised Land, but they were still important leaders in the guidance of Israel, such as what is being exercised by Moses at this particular point. So that, I think, seems to be the tie-in. But we can't be sure because there's no clear explanation about it. So this is what it says in the parenthesis. The people of Israel journeying from Beeroth Bene Yachen to Mosorah. There Aaron died, and there he was buried. Now, that happens in the 40th year. It happened earlier in the year that Moses is giving this speech during. But the event that Moses is talking about this time happens in the second year, the first year of the Exodus, when Israel is camped in front of Mount Sinai and Aaron still has a good 39 years of life left. So Aaron died, there he was buried, his son Eleazar ministered as priest in his place, and from there they journeyed to Gudgoda, and from Gudgoda to Jotbatha, a land with brooks of water. At that time, he who is set apart the tribe of Levi to carry the Ark of the Covenant of he who is to stand before he who is to minister to him and to bless in his name to this day. Now, the to this day part gives us a hint that the person writing this material lives long after Moses. And just basically referencing back for the purpose of those reading the book of Deuteronomy in his day, that the reason why we still have Levites that deal with ministry at the Ark of the Covenant is because things that happened during the years of the Exodus, when Aaron started out as high priest, and then his son Eleazar became the high priest, and Moses was still alive and leading the people in their journeys. Verse number 9, therefore Levi has no portion or inheritance with his brothers. He who is his inheritance, as he who is your God said to him. And those, that's the reference to there not being any inheritance in the promised land for the Levites, meaning no territorial inheritance. They had cities, Levitical cities, scattered through the 12-tribe region. So throw that out there for you to look at and consider on your own as to why it was inserted at that particular place. Verse 10, let's return now to what Moses was talking about as he goes back over the events of being up on the mountain, first for a 40-day period, then later for another 40-day period. So I myself stayed on the mountain, as at the first time, 40 days and 40 nights, and he who is listened to me that time also, he who is was unwilling to destroy you. So after the golden calf incident, that was at the end of the first 40-day period Moses spent on Mount Sinai, Moses went back up a second time and pleaded on behalf of the rebellious Israelis that they would be spared. And as he reports here, that plea was successful. Verse 11, so he who is said to me, arise, go on your journey at the head of the people so that they may go in and possess the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. And so that's a shortcutting big time there of how the remainder of that first year of the Exodus went, where they were building the components of the tabernacle, getting all the priesthood things in place, and then they, at the very beginning of the second year of the Exodus, put all that together, dedicated everything, and then finally, after the second month was pretty much over, they got ready to head for the Promised Land at the direction of Moses. Now, why is he bringing all this up? Well, verse 12. Now, Israel, what does he who is your God require of you but to fear he who is your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve he who is your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and statutes of he who is, which I'm commanding you today for your good. Because remember, Moses has been with this crew for 40 years. The first generation, they're all dead. This generation, the oldest of which is about 59, because remember, only those under the age of 20 at the time of the rebellion in the second year of the Exodus were going to be allowed to go into the Promised Land eventually. So his oldest bunch are in their 50s, and then you've got the next bunch down that was alive at the time of that Exodus. They would be in their 40s. Probably half of them don't even remember those events. And then the rest of them, those in their 30s and 20s and teens and down into their first decade, they were born during the penalty phase. And so Moses goes back over this history to say, learn from the choices, the bad choices of your predecessors. Understand that your responsibility from God is to respect him, to fear him, and then to live the way he tells you to live, to love him with 100% of your being, and to do what he tells you to do. And I'm here, that's Moses, I'm here today, shortly before my death, going back up over all of this stuff for your sake. So listen up. Verse 14. Behold, to He who is your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth with all that is in it. Yet he who has set his heart in love on your fathers and chose their offspring after them, you above all peoples, as you are this day. So he says, think about it. God, who made everything, cares more deeply about you, the kids, the grandkids, the offspring of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob who became Israel. He cares more about you than anything else. So verse 16, circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn. Interesting turn of a phrase here, interesting illustration. The Israeli people, of course, practice circumcision. Every little baby boy that's born into the community on the eighth day of his life, when his clotting is at its peak, his blood clotting is at its peak, gets a little tiny bit of material snipped off the very tip of his sexual organ. Nothing that is needed for generation of the next offspring, but something that he will grow up and be aware of every single day of his life, and something that his wife that he eventually marries will be aware of on a very regular basis. That mark of I belong to the covenant people. That's what the mark of circumcision is all about. Abraham was given it first. He takes that ceremony, he takes that reality. He says, you know what you really need, people? You need to have the covering on your heart cut back so that your heart is open to God, so that your heart is naked for God. The heart, remember, is the Jewish point of thinking. It's where decisions are made. It's the will. In the New Testament, the word mind is equivalent to the word heart. The word mind in Greek is equivalent to the word heart in Hebrew. So he says, circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and no longer be stubborn. Get that barrier out of there. For he who is your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, the awesome God who is not partial and takes no bribe. God is absolutely fair, and you can't sway him to be unfair in your behalf. So he executes justice for the fatherless and the widow. So for the people in Israeli society that have very little power, orphans and widows. God acts on their behalf to make things fair. But not just simply for them. It says also, he loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. The sojourners, of course, are the non-Israelis that are living inside the boundaries of the Promised Land for whatever reason. Some of them might just be passing through. Others have run there away from some other scary place. Some have heard about what's going on in Israel, and they come there looking to be participants in that. But regardless, they are to be treated fairly. That's what God does. That's the principle. And so verse 19, love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. That is an historical reality that is brought up from time to time. to remind the Israelis, be nice to other people that are living in your country when it's not their country, because you remember, or you should historically remember, that was a tough time in Israeli history to be the outsider. I think it's really good for all of us to travel in other countries, to feel what it feels like to be the minority in a place that is not ours. It makes us, for the most part, I think, more sensitive to people in our own country in those sort of circumstances. It definitely triggers that whole do unto others as you would have done unto you rule that Jesus gave us. I've been in plenty of other countries and have definitely been the minority in a situation, and my only prayer and hope was, I hope they treat me fairly. I hope they're kind and compassionate to me and patient with me. So once you've experienced that, you're much more prone to offer that, or you should be. And so that's what the Israelis are being reminded of here. Verse 20, you shall fear he who is your God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's Proverbs 1:7. It's the theme of the Proverbs book. The fear here, yeah, there should be a little bit of knee knocking, a little bit of the pit of the stomach, jumping around sort of response when you think about who God is and how powerful he is and how you are nothing, I'm nothing when compared to him. But the word fear carries with the sense of respect, honor. And that's coming through this context here. You shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear. So be 100% loyal to God is what he's reminding these Israelis to do. He is your praise. He's the one that you thank and brag about. He is your God who has done for you these great and terrifying things that your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt, 70 persons, and now he who is your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven. A reminder again of the great prosperity of the Israeli people. A big change in their numbers. The census that they've just got finished taking a second time at the end of the 40 years of wilderness wanderings is still over 600,000 named men that are going to receive personal property once they cross into the promised land. All of that from 70 people, 70 named men that were on the census list, if you will, when they went into Egypt to begin with. So God did all that. God provided all that, and he got them out of there with great supernatural intervention, which the eldest of the bunch that Moses is talking to experienced firsthand. You know, the guys that are in their 50s, some of those that are in their upper 40s, they remember the 10 plagues. But everybody that's hearing Moses knows about the manna. They know about the water. They know the Shekinah glory of God that's up over the top of the temple. They know that their feet don't swell up and their clothes are not wearing out. They have no hunger. God's keeping them safe and secure disease-wise and wild animal-wise. They know that. And so that should promote them to do the right thing. Chapter 11. You shall therefore love he who is your God and keep his charge, his statutes, his rules, and his commandments always. So what God has already done should be enough reason to live according to the covenant. That's what Moses wants these guys to know. Consider today since I'm not speaking to your children who have not known or seen it, consider the discipline of He who is your God, His greatness, His mighty hand and His outstretched arm, His signs and His deeds that He did in Egypt to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and all His land, and what He did to the army of Egypt, to their horses and their chariots, how He made the water of the Red Sea flow over them as they pursued after you, and how He who is has destroyed them in this day. And got to pause there. This is a really long sentence. They didn't worry about keeping sentences short and just make paragraphs. Again, Moses is targeting that eldest bunch that's going into the Promised Land, the ones that were teenagers and 8, 9, 10 years of age whenever the Exodus first happened, because they know all this stuff. They've seen all these things when they were kids. And here they are. They're the leaders of the group that's going into the Promised Land. They need to act in full recognition of the power and leadership of God once they get into the Promised Land. Now, the other things pretty much everybody knows about, because the other events in this long paragraph happened only earlier in the 40th year that we're in right now, just a few months earlier. Says, and you also know what He did to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, son of Reuben. Actually, that one happened back in the second year. How the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households, their tents, and every living thing that followed them in the midst of Israel. For your eyes have seen all the great work of He who is that He did. So the oldest bunch, they saw all that stuff early. But everybody has seen the things that God continued through the rest of the years of the wilderness wanderings. And that means you act upon what you know. Verse 8, you shall therefore keep the whole commandment that I am commanding you today, that you may be strong and go in and take possession of the land that you're going over to possess, and that you may live long in the land that He who is swore to your fathers to give it to them and to their offspring, a land flowing with milk and honey. So the promise from God is, trust me, do what I tell you to do, and this land that you're going into is going to be handed over to you. It's a land that I promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, a land that is exceptionally prosperous. And Moses reemphasizes that need for trust and keeping of God's commandment. Verse 10, for the land that you are entering to take possession of is not like the land of Egypt from which you came. Remember, the land of Egypt has a unique environment. It doesn't rain there. It doesn't snow there. The water that comes with the monsoons deep down in Africa, down in the, I think, Congo or whatever it is called still down there, up by Lake Victoria, those monsoons swell up the sources of the Nile, and it sends all that water downstream and provides this inundation of the Nile every year, and floods the floodplain and lays down brand new, very fertile mud. And that's what allows the people of Egypt to have such great crops all the time. And so here, God, through Moses, says, look, you're going into a land that's nothing like Egypt. It says, where you sowed your seed and irrigated it like a garden of vegetables. They had to have irrigation systems to get that water out of the flooded Nile area up to the different crop areas, because it didn't rain. Verse 11, but the land that you are going over to possess is a land of hills and valleys. It's not like a flat area next to the river. It drinks water by the rain from heaven. So it rains on a regular basis, starting, you know, probably October, and it rains on and off through the winter months until we get to February, early March, and then it kind of dries up again. So the rain cycle. A land that he who is your God cares for. The eyes of he who is your God are always upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So basically just Moses saying, it is a marvelous place, a place with a great weather pattern. But you're only going to get to keep it if you do what God said. If you will indeed obey my commandments and what I command you today, to love he who is your God, to serve him with all your heart, with all your soul, he will give the rain for your land in its season, the early rain, you know, the stuff that starts in the late fall, and the latter rain, the stuff that starts in the late winter, that you may gather in your grain and your wine and your oil. He will give grass in your fields for your livestock, and you shall eat and be full. Take care lest your heart be deceived and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. Then the anger of he who is will be kindled against you, and he will shut up the heavens so there will be no rain, and the land will yield no fruit, and you will perish quickly off the good land that he who is giving you. So a warning from the prophet Moses. It's a great land you're getting ready to go into, but remember who the landlord is. If you blow him off, if you sin against God, he will turn off the water. And the land that is so prosperous and beautiful and good will dry up as part of the punishment against your sins. Mark your place. We'll come back here next time to get into the Word.